So already we're going to see a squeeze from the fusion space. But once this hit commercialization, there's simply not enough tungsten in the world to supply to these reactors. So it's a huge supply chain issue that no one's really talking about. So we're really trying to get the story out here. And it really emphasizes the importance of what we're doing here at Golden Metal with our flagship asset.
Yeah, well, you have my attention. So it reminds me actually of the uranium story that's happened in the past 8 months. Oliver, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Andy. How are you?
Doing well. I should say good afternoon. You're located where you're living in London right now. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, living in London, but from, you probably tell from my accent, I'm not from London originally. I'm from Canada. I'm from Vancouver.
Let's start with that. How did that all happen? You came out of the beautiful Vancouver, BC. Been through there many times. I'm actually from Anchorage, Alaska. Driving down to Seattle, we'd obviously have to go through British Columbia, and loved it. And how did you end up in London?
Yeah, it's a question I get quite often because Vancouver, and your listeners are probably well aware of, is a hotbed for junior mining exploration. So it was a great place to be working. But the way that this came about, I guess I'll just kind of backtrack a little bit to the early days of my career. So I'm a geologist by trade. I went to school, did all my schooling in BC in Vancouver, spent all my summers in my early years of exploration, mostly focused in Western North America, just kind of staying, British Columbia, Alaska, as you mentioned. I did some work up there in the Yukon, and then actually ended up working for Barrick Gold down in Nevada. And I lived in Elko, Nevada for a while and was part of the Cortez Hills team there. It's a 15 million ounce gold discovery there now. So it was a great experience to kind of live in Nevada and experience it and live and breathe it. And then ended up starting a consulting company with a few of my partners that I met actually at university, funny enough. And we kind of specialized in overseeing, managing relatively complex drilling exploration programs for kind of CSC, TSX, TSXV listed companies. But a part of that, and being based once again in Vancouver, a lot of our clients were exploring in Idaho, Nevada, BC. So I just really got to know that part of the world and the exploration, methodology and the permitting and the people really, really well. So fast forward about 3.5 years ago now, I actually ended up moving to London. And when I got to London, I realized that it's very much an underserved market in the junior mining and exploration and development space, which means there's a lot of capital here in London, but there's not a ton of high quality, what I would consider to be high quality exploration and development names for people to invest in here. So I've sat down with a partner of mine, which is now, or was formerly the CEO of our parent company that we spun out of. I said, hey, how can I get involved here? How can we kind of build something really exciting and new that the UK market hasn't seen? And we very quickly landed on Nevada. Reason being, Nevada is obviously the best place in the world to explore and develop. But on top of that, I had really good intimate experience working there. And on top of that, in the UK, there was really no pure play Nevada focused vehicle. So we said, okay, let's build Nevada from the ground up. Let's incorporate the company, add the properties, add the management team, and then bring something very unique and exciting to the UK market. But being a US focused company in terms of all our assets being in Nevada, we've since listed or dual listed on the OTC market in the US. So a lot of our volume is now starting to pick up on the US side as Americans really start to understand the importance of our flagship asset, which is the largest tungsten deposit on US soil.
Okay. So I want to talk about that in a minute, but you've hit on something quite interesting. You're in the UK. So that was I want to make sure I'm following you correctly. That was a strategic move to be in the UK, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Once again, to bring something unique to a market that's underserved and there's a lot of capital that could flow into high quality names.
We talked about you. Let's talk about the company and specifically the project that you're excited about.
Yeah. So the company name is Golden Metal Resources. Now, it's a bit of a misleading name. When we first put it together, the plan was to be kind of a Carlin-focused Nevada gold explorer. And we do have an exciting Carlin-type property in the portfolio. But we quickly, after we incorporated the company, we were introduced to an asset called Pilot Mountain. Which is located sort of equidistant between Reno and Las Vegas. And it hosts the what we believe is the largest undeveloped tungsten asset on U.S. soil. So I said, okay, I had a look at this asset. And actually, the first thing that really drew me in there was the exploration upside. I mean, I'm an exploration geologist. I love drilling and exploring and making new discoveries. And it was the exploration upside that really kind of drew me in there. And then I started to learn about tungsten a bit more and did some, you know, some digging on it. This was probably 2.5-3 years ago. There was a bit of information out there, what it's used for, but no one was really talking about it. And my experience in this space has always been, you know, it's so hard to time these things, right? I mean, there's so many commodities that are operating on their own different kind of scales, and things are moving them up and things are moving them down. And so often companies will, you know, acquire a lithium asset at the time when lithium has gone down and no one cares about it anymore. So it's really important. And it's a bit of a hockey Canadian analogy for you, which is to skate to where the puck is going. Try to be, you know, look two, three years down the line. What are people really going to be looking for 2 to 3 years from now? And then acquire the assets that will kind of fill that void. And so I started to look into tungsten a bit more, and there wasn't a, I mean, there's information out on it, but no one was really talking about it. But what was really interesting about tungsten, well, there was two things I think that in particular that was interesting was, number one, tungsten is about 10% of tungsten that is consumed globally goes directly into the defense industry. So it's a defense metal very much. It's used in things like, you know, high-speed armor piercing ammunitions, tank armors, things like that, because tungsten has the highest melting point as well as being the most dense metal on the entire planet. So it's very unique thermodynamic and chemical properties. So the defense element was interesting because I knew the defense industry uses a lot of it. But another angle that really got me excited about tungsten was the fact that these nuclear fusion reactors, not to be confused with nuclear fission, which uses uranium and produces a lot of energy that the world consumes today, but nuclear fusion, which is a kind of a new technology that's really advancing quite quickly. The U.S. is a trailblazer in the nuclear fusion space. I know Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, just invested about $500 million in a nuclear fusion startup. A big scientific hurdle was just reached in the UK on the fusion side of things. But really, what really kind of got me interested there was not only the fusion space and how quickly this technology was making leaps and bounds, but the fact that the only metal that they've found which can actually contain these very, very, very high temperature reactors is tungsten. And not only that, it's not like a thin tungsten wall. Because these reactors are so incredibly hot, you need very, very thick, almost pure tungsten walls to contain these reactors. And so we ended up talking to a nuclear fusion startup out of the UK. And one of the numbers that was quoted to me was one large-scale commercial fusion reactor will require up to 5% of the tungsten that's consumed globally for all use cases, which was a number that simply put me on the floor. So that's kind of what we're doing now is we're pushing forward this tungsten asset, and it's gotten really interesting the last couple of months and years here.
Can you say that again? Because I'm kind of overwhelmed with that, what you just said.
Yeah, no, of course. It's a lot of information, but the way I'll break it down is the world currently consumes, let's say it's about 117, but we'll just round down and say it's 100,000 tons of tungsten per year. So that's the every country in the world for all use cases. It goes into, you know, goes into the defense industry, it goes into automobiles, it goes into aerospace, all these different technologies. 100,000 tons is consumed globally for every use case. The US consumes about 10 to 15,000 of that 100,000 tons. The important fact about fusion is one fusion reactor, one large-scale commercial fusion reactor will require approximately or up to about 5,000 tons of tungsten. So you can imagine if you're trying to build two reactors in a year, that's going to require 10%. An additional 10% on top of what they're already used. So pretty, I mean, mind-blowing numbers, really. I mean, if you put that into perspective, if there was any one reactor that needed 1% of the copper that's consumed globally, I mean, everyone would go crazy about this. But no one's talking about the fusion angle, and no one's talking about tungsten. But now they're starting to, and there's a lot of articles coming up. If you just Google fusion, or sorry, tungsten, you'll see all these articles going, wait a second, there's something happening here in tungsten, and there's not many companies that have tungsten assets.
Right. Okay. So the next question would be how many nuclear fusion reactors are projected to be built over the next decade?
So over the next decade, it's hard to say. I mean, this technology, it's still in the R&D stage right now. They just made one of the biggest breakthroughs in that technology in the UK a few weeks ago. So it's getting close and they're making a lot of positive strides. I don't know when they will, you know, finalize the technology and say, okay, let's build the first commercial fusion reactor. There's different estimates as to when that will be, a few years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. We don't exactly know. It's a lot of money is going behind it. And on top of that, even if, say, the first fusion, the actual commercial fusion reactor was, say, 8 years away, a lot of large-scale R&D reactors are being built, including in the U.S., in France, in the U.K. They've all commissioned and funded these large-scale R&D reactors, which are being built now. And large orders of tungsten will be coming from those facilities in the next year or two. So already we're going to see a squeeze from the fusion space. But once this hit commercialization, there's simply not enough tungsten in the world to supply to these reactors. So it's a huge supply chain issue that no one's really talking about. So we're really trying to get the story out here. And it really emphasizes the importance of what we're doing here at Golden Metal with our flagship asset.
Yeah, well, you have my attention. So it reminds me actually of the uranium story that's happened in the past 8 months and what you had. And I was actually following that story for years. People were, for lack of a better word, hyping uranium and nothing happened. And then it just went parabolic, if you would, in 6 months. And now taking a break, come down a little, but now again, if you're just following the commodity, now just all of these stories are coming out where, you know, we're going to be short uranium. So what you're telling me, it reminds me somewhat of that, if you would, as far as a pure commodity play. Now, my next question to you is, where are companies that need tungsten? Where are they getting it from now? What jurisdictions and who has it? Yeah. How are they getting it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good comparison between tungsten and uranium, but one of the major differences is uranium is produced by a swath of different countries. Canada, Kazakhstan are big producers. But the other thing that makes tungsten in particular really interesting is the fact that China currently produces about 86% of total global supply. So there's a list of, I would say, probably 10 metals right now where China produces more than 85% of total Wow. global supply. And what's interesting, or what's kind of scary, I guess I should say, is, you know, for instance, if you've come across germanium or gallium, those are two metals that China controlled the supply of those to the US. And not very long ago, as a sort of a not a precursor, but they're sort of escalating things between China and the US, as they said, okay, no more gallium or germanium to the US as a direct shot towards the chip industry in the US. So what's happening is China and Russia as well are starting to weaponize the supply chains of these really important critical input metals. So with tungsten, you know, with 86% of tungsten coming from China right now, and the fact that the US Department of Defense is requiring so much tungsten to build up these ammunition stockpiles, which have been depleted, well, you're reliant on China for most of your tungsten. So China produces 86% of total global supply. The other big players would be Bolivia, Vietnam, Australia. But with 86% coming from China, there's not a lot of production in the Western world. And almost every country is reliant on China for their tungsten. And I just saw a really interesting article, or scary article, I should say, once again, is from Fast Markets. There's an ongoing Ferro Alloys conference in Hong Kong right now. And they listed four metals that are going to be a focal point of that conference. And they even speculated that China could look to curb or ban exports of tungsten to the US and other Western world countries as a result of this conference. So that the time to reshore and support US mining is, I mean, everyone knows how important that is, but particular looking at these very strategic input metals into the defense space and saying, hey, we need a safe, secure supply of these metals. And we have the largest tungsten asset on US soil. So it's really strategic right now. And we're really happy with the position we're in. And we want to push forward and be the only domestic supplier of tungsten to the US.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk about the project then. So very compelling argument. Now, yeah, let's talk about the project. What do you tell me everything I need to know about it?
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this project for hours and hours, but I'll give you kind of the 2-3 minute overview. So as I mentioned, the most important fact here is it is the largest undeveloped tungsten asset on U.S. soil. I touched on the location. It's in between Reno and Nevada. It's a great, great part of Nevada. I've done a lot of work in there. It's about 20 miles off the main highway. There's a power line that runs almost to it. A small mining town called Mina is nearby. So all that really important kind of critical infrastructure is in place and ready to go.
It's already there.
It's already there, which means the CapEx
buildout. That was going to be a question.
Yeah, the CapEx buildout is much lower than if you're looking to put a mine in the middle of nowhere under production. So a lot of those really important boxes have been checked. The other important thing to note is back in 2018, actually, the company who owned it was looking to put it into production. They wanted to be the only domestic U.S. tungsten miner. At that time, though, tungsten is what it is now, which is, you know, the defense is now increasing their usage of tungsten 24% year over year. So what that means and why this is so different this time around is there's a program. Well, there's multiple programs, but there's one in particular called the DPA Defense Production Act Title III, which is administered through the U.S. Department of Defense. And what the DOD is looking to do through this governing body is allocate funds, non-dilutive grant funds, to domestic defense metal projects. Now, Perpetua Resources in Idaho just received a top-up, and now they've received $60 million U.S. dollars to advance their antimony project because of the amount of antimony that's needed to build ammunition stockpiles in the U.S. And tungsten, as I mentioned, has a critical role within these ammunition stockpiles, and there's no domestic source. So what we're doing here is we're advancing and pushing forward these discussions with the U.S. Department of Defense, as well as other U.S. government bodies which have these funds available. Because if we can tap into these funding sources through the DOD or DOE or DOM, it will allow us to fast track from where we're at now to production. Because the reality is the U.S. needs domestic tungsten like right now, not 10 years from now.
Okay, so let's say I'm an investor and I wrote you a check. How does all of that, you getting a grant from the U.S. Defense Department, or how does that affect me as a shareholder? In the sense of, is that diluting my shares? How does that work? I have no idea how that works.
No, so probably one of the best parts about these government programs, especially through the DPA Title III, is it's non-dilutive grant funding. So what that means is if we are successful, and we've put out multiple RNSs to outline what our award strategy is, who we put in place to help us tap into these funding sources. But based on all the data points we have, we feel very confident about the position we're in and confident about potentially receiving non-dilutive grant funding. But the way it works is if we are successful, we will simply receive a check from the U.S. government from the DPA Title III program, which goes into our bank account. The mandate or the stipulation of that money is we must use it on U.S. soil. But the great thing is 95% of our costs as a business are on U.S. soil. It's about paying for all the contractors who are in state working on pushing this project forward. So as an existing shareholder, if we are successful, it's an absolute home run because it just means it's a cash injection into the business, which we will use to build and push the project forward. So if you look at Perpetua, you know, when they receive these grants, it's obviously fantastic news because it means less dilution for the business. I don't need to go to the market now to raise, you know, whatever that amount of money that I would receive would be. I can just take that money, ignore having to raise any more, and just focus on getting this project to construction decision and ultimately to mining this and bringing tungsten to domestic suppliers here in the U.S.
Yeah, so that was really my question, and you answered it very well. Is my number one fear is dilution, and I think that is the fear to most investors, right? Yeah. And so it seems like, and again, I have no experience in raising this kind of money, especially from the government, but it seems like it's the exact opposite. I'm getting all the benefit. Like you said, an injection of capital. And yet it seems like my shares would actually be a lot more valuable.
Absolutely. Because once you have the government support as well, that just puts a huge kind of tailwind in what you're doing. Because not only through the DOD, but that can unlock funds through, say, the Department of Energy as well. And that's one thing we're looking to push forward on the fusion angle. So as an existing investor, you're right, it's a home run because it means I don't need to go to the market. And more importantly, I have the support of the DOD. I mean, this is obviously if we are successful, But it allows us to focus on exploring, pushing for these really important projects, because their mandate, what the DoD needs, is a domestic source of all these different metals. So they don't need to rely on the likes of China and Russia to build whatever they need to build through the DoD or DOE. So it's an important part of what we're doing. And we're in a very unique spot because most companies in this space have to go to the market to, you know, dilute. And I completely agree with you, Andy. I hate dilution as well. I'm an existing shareholder of the business, right? I've invested multiple times along this pathway that we're going on. And I don't want to dilute myself either, because it makes my shares less valuable. So I'm doing everything in my power to protect the existing shareholders and make sure that we can push these things forward with having to dilute as minimal as possible.
Okay. Yeah, that's music to my ears. The next question I would have then would be, let's assume first that we don't get the grant. What happens then?
Well, we have our existing cash reserves.
Can you tell me about that? Give me a number.
Yes. So all I can do is quote the previous financial reports, which was about 850, 900,000 pounds, which converts to about 1.2 million US dollars.
In the bank.
So we're currently deploying that capital. If you look at our press releases and news we've put out over the last several months, I mean, we've been using these funds and pushing the business forward and had a lot of success with some of the work that we've done. Our share price is gone up almost double since we IPO'd back in May. So we have our existing cash reserves. On top of that, we have some warrants that we issued as part of the IPO. So those are now in the money with our share price having done well. So we're currently having warrants being exercised, which is bringing additional cash into the business. And then the DPA Title III is obviously one that we're particularly excited about. But moreover, there's a lot of funding available through other departments that we're also pushing for as well. So it's not like if we didn't get DPA III, we'd kind of be, okay, what do we do now? There's other ongoing conversations for other U.S. non-dilutive grant funding. It's the warrants that are coming in. It's existing cash balances. And then it's the other grants that are potentially available. And you know, with all the data points that we have on this project and the importance of tungsten, we feel quite confident that, you know, we will receive government grant funding at some point here along the process.
Sure. So let me ask you this one specifically about the project is, what's the ETA or the timeline of going into production?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and one that certainly the U.S. government has asked as well, because they want to know how quickly they can kind of get tungsten to the U.S. market. Because a timeline that's probably worth quoting here for your listeners is as of January 2026, so in less than 2 years from now, the U.S. Department of Defense is actually banning the imports of tungsten from China for all DoD procurement. So you're banning imports from your largest import partner in less than 2 years. So as you can imagine, they need to find a source to replace that supply. So that puts us in a very unique position. But the previous company, as I mentioned back in 2018, was going to put this into production. They had estimated a timeline of about 2.5 years. The great thing is a lot of the really important kind of baseline studies have been done. So the baseline environmental, the metallurgical studies have been done to an FS standard. So a lot of that important groundwork has already been done and given us a leg up on that that kind of timeline to shorten it to get it into production. So we still believe that timeline is fully intact. There's other, especially with tailwinds from the U.S. government. So if we are successful with the DPA Title III, that makes, you know, that allows us to shorten the timeline once again, because I don't need to go to the market. I can just take that money and push the project forward. On top of that, another way the U.S. government is looking to support domestic defense metal projects is through new permitting bodies. One is called FAST 41. So it helps streamline the permitting process. So they're looking for strategic projects that they can partner up with to make sure that, you know, there's no kind of hurdles or things that slow us up as we look to put this project into production. So there's a lot of tailwinds that we're looking to tap into. And if we are successful, I believe that timeline is very much a realistic possibility, which in the grand scheme of mining and a lot of these projects, you know, when they start from scratch, take, you know, say 10, 15 years. I mean, if they can be in production in 2.5, 3 years time, that's a huge win and means that the U.S. can very quickly reduce their reliance on China and other kind of unfriendly countries for their tungsten.
Right. The next question I have, it seems like you would be and I don't know if you can comment about this, but I'm just gaming this out. It looks like you'd be a great takeover candidate, which would be, if I'm a shareholder, that would be great for me. So what are, and again, if you can't comment it, don't, obviously, but what are, can you work me through that? Like, how does that look like? And what is the plan?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't comment if that is the case or not. I mean, what I can say is this project has significant national security implications, and it really does. And I really mean that, because the amount of tungsten that the DOD needs right now and where it currently gets it from is just not a palatable solution anymore. So we have a very unique asset. You know, what I would say is, you know, in terms of being a takeover candidate, what we're going to do and what we're going to focus on is continuing to push the project forward and de-risk it. Because the more that we can de-risk it, the more a larger company can come in and say, okay, you've taken the risk away. We know the importance of it. Let's take it off your hands and we'll mine it for take it from here. So I agree. I mean, I think we are in a unique position. The asset is relatively advanced, but what we're going to do is we're going to take the capital we have, the capital coming in, and hopefully grant money. We're going to continue to explore it and de-risk it and get it closer to production. Because ultimately, these companies, typically they come in a bit later into the cycle. Once you've really kind of answered a lot of questions, they'll say, okay, now is the time where we take it on. So that's what we're going to focus on, getting it close, as close to production and construction ready as we can. As I mentioned, I think it's probably just worth highlighting the exploration as well. So the de-risking, doing a lot of the really important studies to get this to a construction ready decision. But on top of that, the exploration potential is tremendous. As I mentioned, when I first saw the asset and knew nothing about tungsten, it was actually the exploration. I'm going, wait a second, there's all these other skarn zones and a potential causative porphyry to be discovered here that no one's gone and drilled. So we think there's scope to very materially increase the amount of contained tungsten and contained resources there. So we're going to push forward exploration. We're going to continue to de-risk. And if someone comes down the line, you know, I would think it would probably be a US-based miner, one who's maybe getting pressure from the US government, or the US government wants to kind of take control of this asset and make sure that they get the tungsten they need, then we'd be happily willing to have that conversation. But we have our goals, and we know what we need to do, and we're going to push forward and get there as quickly as we can.
Got it. Okay. So last question, I'm just thinking through this. My mind goes to what could go wrong, not what's right, just as a potential investor. So that, let's end on that.
What could go wrong? I mean, it's something it's a good question. I mean, what can go wrong? Obviously, you alluded to not getting US government grant funding, or at least not during this current cycle. You know, I mentioned we feel quite confident in the position we're in and the data points that we have that we're a very, very exciting candidate for US government grant funding. And if it doesn't come in, I mentioned the kind of backup plans we have, the existing cash reserves, warrant money as well. Obviously there's strategic US investors as well who are interested in this project. What else can go wrong? I mean, the big kind of question mark here is China being the dominant supplier of tungsten for the entire world. And there's been multiple times in the past where what's happened is China's actually flooded the market when they saw their kind of stranglehold on that particular commodity going away. But we foresee potentially the opposite happening this time around, because it's a much different geopolitical landscape now. So what we potentially could see happen, and I think I alluded to it, is possibly China says, actually, we're not going to export any more tungsten. And that's what we believe is a much more likely scenario now. So that, if anything, would be a positive for our project. But in terms of other things that could trip us up, you know, the great thing is, as you mentioned, a lot of those really important de-risking studies have already been done. So if we were a bit earlier on, I would say, you know, maybe the metallurgy is going to trip us up. Well, no, we have advanced metallurgical studies, which give us all the green light to push this project forward. And it shows it produces a really nice concentrate. Or if we hadn't done the baseline environmental, I would say maybe the environmental permitting will trip us up. Well, no, the baseline studies have indicated there's absolutely no impediments to development. So a lot of those really important kind of first and second steps in pushing these projects forward have already been answered for us. Which is great, because it gives me so much more confidence to go out and speak to people like yourself and potential investors and the US government to say, hey, we checked all these boxes. We need the money now to do that next round. But we're pretty confident. I mean, we're very confident in what we have so far right now. And I could not be more, you know, the fact that we need a domestic source of tungsten is so, so prevalent right now. So we're very lucky and fortuitous. It's a fortuitous position we're in. And we're really pleased with what we're doing here at Gold Metal. The market's taking notice. And I think the U.S. is really starting to take notice now as we continue to get the story out to the U.S. investors who obviously have a vested interest in the national security of the U.S.
Got it. Oliver, let's end on, give us your ticker, both on the over-the-counter, as well as you said, I believe you're on Toronto, and I don't know your tickers, but I'd love to have them and I'll write them down, as well as any other info you can give to people can reach out to you or reach out to the company and that sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. So as I mentioned, the company is Golden Metal Resources PLC. So we trade on the LSC AIM segment under the ticker GMET, GMET. OTCQB, our ticker is GMTLS, as in G Metal S. We're very active on Twitter. So I encourage anyone who's interested in what we're doing, definitely go to our Twitter, Golden Metal Resources, my personal Twitter as well. You'll see it linked through the company's Twitter, but we post a lot about tungsten. A lot of those articles that I mentioned, Andy, that are, you know, coming out all of a sudden say, hey, whoa, we need a tungsten source. A lot of those will be posted on those accounts. GoldenMetalResources.com is our website. And if you go there, you'll find our info at email and those go directly to me. So I encourage anyone who's interested, reach out, info@GoldenMetalResources.com. I will respond. You know, a lot of CEOs, you email them and you'll never hear back. I will respond, set up a call. We can do an email chain. I want to talk about the business with anyone that's interested. So Twitter, website, and we're very active on all those platforms. So I encourage everyone to go and have a look and get more information.
Thank you, Oliver. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
Yep, you bet. We'll see you again.